The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky tunes. All of our purposes don't push away. It's the same on the weekends as the rest of the days. And I know I should go, but I will probably.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half of your host, Darren Bresnitz. Greg Bresnitz is still recovering from Coachella. Just want to dedicate and shout out the show to Kong and Shannon Fan, whose going away party turned into a surprise wedding on Saturday. They're hitting the road to California. All of our love, all of our thoughts. We are continuing our series today on spring and summer preview events, and one of the most exciting and my personal favorites are the James Beard Awards coming up, well, coming up this week, starting this Friday, and we have the Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation, Mitchell Davis, also co-host on Heritage Radio. Mitchell, welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Dan. Actually, I'm not there. I'm in London, actually, at another great event, the World's 50 Best Restaurants, but the other great awards for chefs and restaurants in the world, next to the Beard Awards.
Now, are you a betting man? Because who do you think is going to take, is it Noma again, or who do you think is taking the top spot?
I do not know, though I am the chair, the Academy chair for the Northeast or the East of the North America, and I'm looking at Rene Redzepi with a lot of cameras around, but nobody knows until announced it in a couple of hours. So,
oh my.
So I don't know. Yeah.
You know, this week of the year is really one of my favorite culinary stretches, not only because it's a fun to get dressed up and everyone goes out, but it's really a celebration of chefs. And I think the James Beard Awards have really risen to the top as one of the best events to really celebrate and recognize and put chefs on the same levels as, you know, the way that actors celebrated at the Oscars and musicians are celebrated at the Grammys.
I appreciate you saying that. I mean, it was actually Time Magazine that called them the Oscars of the Food World several years ago, and that's really stuck. And I think the important part of it is as you say, it's about elevating what chefs do to other cultural art forms. They're the Tonys, they're the Emmys, they're the Oscars, and there are the Beard Awards. And I think that says the fact that so many people pay attention to them says so much about the importance chefs have gained in sort of the cultural art that we all enjoy so much.
Yes, I mean, to go there now is really a star-studded event. Explain for those who have not experienced the James Beard Awards, what are they, who goes there, what are they really saying about the food scene?
Sure. Well, unlike this event here, the World's 50 Best, it's just about America, or North America, and there are two sorts of awards. Friday night, May 3rd, as you mentioned, we do the Book, Podcast, and Journalism Awards, and those are for those categories of wonderful work done on food, books on food, journalism on food, broadcast media about food. And that in itself is a great event and really, I think, shows the talent that we have in America when it comes to writing about and learning about and educating not just America but the world about food. We have such great writers. And then Monday at Lincoln Center at Avery Fisher Hall is the red carpet black tie gala that is the James Beard Awards, the real Oscars. Almost 2,000 people attend. There's a 2.5-hour ceremony in the auditorium that, you know, is like any beautiful award show with beautiful people. The fashion is as fun as the actual winners and nominees. And that's followed by a reception where 30 or so chefs cook for all of those people incredible food. If anyone ever thinks that you can't cook well for a lot of people, they need to come to the Beard Awards. And in fact, the Beard Awards are open to the public. A lot of people don't know that, but anyone can buy a ticket to attend. And you get to see everyone who's anyone in the world of food and enjoy a great reception afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, the major complaint I hear about all the other awards shows is that everyone's so hungry that you have to eat before, bring a granola with you. This is not the case.
Yeah. No, this is certainly not the case there. I mean, if the Beard Foundation is known for anything, we're known for throwing a great party, and you never leave hungry. And if you do, then we've done something really, really wrong. Unlike the Oscars, let's say.
Yes. Now, one of the things that I've really loved over the years is watching the equal rise of the book and the broadcast and the journalism awards, showing how well-rounded, because it's starting to go beyond just the chefs and the people who work in the food, but it's also the people who write and report on it. And can you talk to me about yes, go on.
Sure. I mean, the reality is that without radio stations like Heritage Radio, without food writers and restaurant critics and cookbook authors, you don't have a food culture. You know, like the number of people who are going to go into any one of the restaurants is very, very small. And those people, the intermediaries in media, take that experience, take the knowledge that only a few people can gain, and they really share it with everyone. I mean, part of my academic work, which involves the relationship between media and food, really tries to show how they're directly related. However much a chef might hate the world of food critics or, you know, bloggers these days or all the people taking pictures and eating, I don't think you can separate our enthusiasm and our increasing, the increasing influence of food. You can't separate out the media piece of that. They really go hand in hand. And they have changed. And in fact, one of the other things that's changed is that so many chefs are now also cookbook authors or writers or, you know, participating in the media world in many different ways. They have really important blogs. Marcus Samuelson has the Republic blog. David Chang has Lucky Peach, which is a magazine nominated for several Beard Awards this year. So there's a real crossover. And I think that's because they're so related, media and food.
Yes. Now, look, I know you can't play favorites, But who has like the best story? Who's got the Cinderella story? Who would you like to see get a nod this year beyond just the nomination?
I can't really. I mean, there are so many stories. You know, there are a few categories that we all look forward to because they're really exciting and because they change so much every year. Those would be best new restaurant, because it's the best new restaurant in the entire country. And if you can imagine how many restaurants opened in the last year just in New York City, and you multiply that by every city in the country, it's quite an honor. And so that one to me is always really interesting and an exciting category. And this year, you know, let's see, The Ordinary in Charleston is nominated, and State Bird Provisions in San Francisco, and Epsilon Cocina in New York, and Grace in Chicago, and actually Rich Table in San Francisco also. So it's a huge national category. And who are my favorites? I don't know. It's like apples and oranges. You never, because this is a voting process, and it's a sort of secret ballot and administered by an accounting firm, you really don't know how the votes are going to split. You know, with two restaurants in San Francisco, does that mean San Francisco has a better shot at winning, or does it mean they're going to split the vote because half the people in San Francisco love one and half love another? So it's just so hard to predict. I don't know that anyone gets rich betting on the Beard Awards, but how's that for an answer for you?
it's the most democratic. It's how you stay at the top. Now, I know that you also, you know, on – not just the national level, you do regions. What's your favorite region that's really come out in the last few years, that's really grown in leaps and bounds and has gotten some of the notoriety with the James Beard Awards?
Well, that's a really good question, actually. The typical ones, of course, are California, the New York City, even sort of Chicago in the Midwest and the West Coast. But then when you look across, one of the things that's been so exciting for me personally over the last 2 years, I've been doing a lot of traveling in the States, and you find yourself in Charleston, let's say, which has an incredible food culture and actually has a couple of nominees this year, Sean Brock for Outstanding Chef, and as I mentioned, Mike Latta for The Ordinary. And Charleston, I think, is a place, it's just an exciting, exciting town. It's got a rich agricultural history and a rich food culture. It has incredible access to people working on all sorts of heirloom products and stuff. And so you see a whole burgeoning food culture there on every level, from a sandwich shops, you know, like Butcher and Bee, all the way up to the finest McCready, Sean Brock's restaurant, Mike Latta's restaurant. So to me, that's an example of a place that you might not have traditionally thought of as a food destination, but is incredible. And then we're about to go to Louisville, which is another great place in the middle of the country that also has a burgeoning food culture, and I'm trying to remember the name of the nominee.
Is it Anthony Lamas from Ceviche, a Latin restaurant?
Maybe it is. I don't see it. I'm sorry. I'm flipping through in front of me. I'm standing outside in the courtyard watching the entire world of food walk by. So to me, it's the unexpected places, obviously, that are so interesting that make their way onto the list. Other great, let's see, looking around the country, Northwest. Well, Portland and Seattle, of course, you would expect to be there. The North Fork Table and Inn is in the Northeast category in South Old New York. That's out on Long Island, a beautiful, beautiful place. And again, you know, in order for people to know about them and experience them, you have to get there. And America's a really big country. It's funny, we're here in London, and obviously there's a great food culture here, but England's a small place, and you can really travel it quickly. When you think about having to be aware of what's going on in the U.S., 5 hours across, you know, 300 million people, and the fact that food has become so much more a part of everyone's culture, not just in the big cities, it's become a real challenge, I think. And one of the things we were very proud of when we saw the list of nominees this year at the Beard Foundation was everywhere was represented. You know, Pete Wells in the New York Times wrote a blog article. He's the restaurant critic for the Times, and he wrote a blog article about how New York had been missed by the Beard Awards, and did they overcompensate? And for us, that was one of the greatest things, because we've always been criticized as being New York-centric, and nothing about our process has changed, but what's going on in the rest of the country has changed.
Absolutely.
There's so much excitement going on around the country with food festivals and magazine coverage and blog coverage of places that I think we were really excited that was the criticism we had, that there wasn't enough New York on that list. That's never happened before.
It just shows that across the land, you know, the work that you guys are doing is just really elevating food on a national level. Now, before you have to go, I know we have the awards, but the awards represent something bigger. It's the James Beard Foundation. And can you talk about a little bit about the foundation and how people want to get involved, how they can get involved?
Sure, and thank you for giving me the chance. I mean, if you go to jamesbeard.org, you really get a picture of all of the different things we do. Obviously, all eyes are on the awards, as you say, but we also have a really robust scholarship program. Over $4.5 million has been given away since we started, and we're right now in the process of the application process. So people go to jamesbeard.org, and they're attending culinary school or are looking for a grant to study somewhere related to food. You might find what you're looking for there and can apply. We also do the dinners at the James Beard House and also dinners around the country. And the Beard House, we have over 225 chefs from around the world come and cook there in the course of a year. And it really is a chance, if you're visiting New York or you live in New York, the world comes to cook for you and perform in that space. It was actually Julia Child who called it Carnegie Hall for Chefs. And the last thing we do has been increasingly an important part of our work. And we've been trying to take all of the enthusiasm and energy and attention that chefs are getting and use that to help make better decisions about how we feed ourselves, how we distribute our food, sort of larger food system issues through an annual food conference, which is also you can apply to attend at jamesbeard.org, and meetings around the country and relationship with the State Department to create an ambassador corps of chef ambassadors, sort of a sense of food as diplomacy. And so you can spend some time on our website. We have a robust blog. You can get our publications if you sign up for Beard Bites, come every 2 weeks. And you really get a snapshot of what's happening in America, in the world, but also with America's place in the larger food world. And I think here at the World's 50 Best, although we're talking about the Beard Foundation, you really see the America's presence in among the greatest food cultures on earth. There are French chefs here. There are chefs from Japan. There are chefs from Denmark, where everyone's attention is right now. And the Americans are as much an integral part of what's going on in the world of food as ever. And we kind of take that for granted. And I think it's because of the work of the Beard Foundation and because of the incredible community we have of media and chefs that has made it so. It doesn't just happen. And I think we should all be very proud.
It really is an amazing organization, and I love what you're doing. And, you know, eating dinner, I've been so lucky enough to have been to that house, and it really is, you know, it's so special, and you feel the history. Well, I think if James Beard was around today, he'd be proud of you and what everyone in the organization has done with food. Mitchell, I will not keep you any longer. Go have a great time. I will be keeping my eyes peeled to the internet to see who the big winner is. I have my own guesses. I'm going to say is... I'm looking at
you. You can also follow me at Kitchen Sense. Sorry, I'll be tweeting live here, so you don't have to wait for it to be posted, or at the Beard Foundation Twitter also. So stay tuned, and then stay tuned for the Beard Awards next week.
And let's not forget that Kitchen Sense is also your wonderful cookbook, which you can pick up on Amazon.com. To search Kitchen Sense, Mitchell Davis. Well, Mitchell, thank you. I will be in my very best next Monday night and hope to see you there dressed to the nines.
Thanks, Dan. Hope to see you too.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a great time. We're going to take a little break, and then we got the Rev coming in. We've got a bunch of events to continue our summer preview. This is the Harmoir second track off his new album, Bye Bye 17. Came out last Tuesday. Do yourself a favor and pick up the album.
I'm under arrest.
Well, that was just Prisoner of Love by the wonderful Harmar Superstar. We have the Rev in office, in studio. He was just telling me about his glory days as a Smashing Pumpkin DJ at the nightly radio station. What station? Shout it out.
It was WWDX in Lansing, Michigan. It was my first commercial radio job, and like I was saying, I did the midnight to 6 a.m. Friday and Saturday, and the studio had this gigantic window that looked out on the street where all the college bars were, so it was my friends pointing at me laughing on the way into the bar and pointing at me laughing on the way out of the bar.
I had the Friday 12 to 2 a.m. shift. I think it lasted like 3 weeks before it got kicked off the air for, you know, intoxication reasons.
I would get kicked off for like slipping in White Zombie at like 4:45 in the morning. Yeah. Like, you were listening?
Yeah, who was listening? So we're here to talk about a couple events. First up, you have the second annual New York Burger Week.
Very exciting.
Happening May 1st through May 7th. 2013. Really, really excited. Tell me about it. Why burgers?
You know what? I love food. It's probably a universal theme to the show and the guests on it. And I dedicated myself to writing a blog about hamburgers about 5 years ago. And it just, it grew wildly out of proportion. I did it as a joke and it has taken its own life. And last year I thought, wow, I have all these connections. I know all these people. I know this great food. I want to share it with people. Let's celebrate National Hamburger Month by having 7 days of like really cool, glorious burger events. And it went better than I had expected. And so this year I was like, I can't not do this again.
Right.
You know, it has to happen. You know, and since last year, we have refined the ideas, have found not better partners, but different partners, and I'm able to do like, you know, 7 day showcase of really cool burger events. Most of them are pretty boozy. They all involve bourbon or beer or something like that.
But what's your favorite? Do you like beer or bourbon when you're pairing with a burger?
Beer, because I can drink more of it and the flavors are more wide.
Favorite beer, favorite burger pairing?
Oh, God, that is an awesome question. I don't think I would ever come down to one because of the variety of burgers I like. But I'd have to tell you that just a standard Kolsch or Pilsner, a Kolsch or a Pilsner with a standard slider, like one that's been prepared, you can't beat that. It's just so refreshing.
That's awesome. I see that one of the events is the Guns N' Roses Appetite for Destruction burger and beer pairing.
That's the kickoff event.
What is that?
So we did it last year. We took an Iron Maiden album and paired all nine songs of Peace of Mind with nine different beers. And so as we'd hit play on the album, and as each song started, you got a beer or a burger that paired with that song. So it was such a hit. We said, all right, we got to do it again. What do I want to do it for? And I thought Appetite for Destruction was a funny pun. And so it's 12 courses paired with each song on that album. Four burgers, six beers from three breweries. Order of tater tots and bourbon ketchup, and they're all perfectly paired, quote-unquote.
It's all perfectly sold out.
Yeah, it did sell out.
It sold out, but it's great. Like, welcome to that burger, sautéed onions, sautéed jalapenos, American cheese, out to Emmy bacon, the bourbon ketchup, blue cheese. That's going to be a lot of fun.
It's also serving as, so at Idle Hands, which is the bar I own where that's being hosted, right. We have an independent purveyor inside there called That Burger. He leases the kitchen from us and runs his restaurant from the bar. It's his last night there.
Oh.
So after Wednesday, we will not have burgers again. So it's his going away party and sort of the Welcome to New York Burger Week. This just big, crazy night of burgers.
That's crazy because Idle Hands you've gotten known for your burgers.
Yep. But we don't own that part.
Oh.
We lease the kitchen to Dan from That Burger. So he's going to go off and do whatever That Burger does, and we'll usher in whatever the next, you know, sort of pop-up kitchen idea is.
So talk to me about some of the other events. I see that there is the bourbon and burger pairing dinner, which looks pretty boozy and pretty decadent.
That one's cool. It's at Harding's. So basically, you're going to start in the reception area where you'll be given a cocktail lesson on how to make a bourbon smash.
Yeah.
You then get taken to, they have this private whiskey room with closed door. We'll do a bourbon tasting with a bourbon rep. You then get walked into the kitchen where the chef shows you how she makes this triple ground meat burger. It's three grinds. And then you sit at a private table for 16 people, and the chef will serve you the burger. That one sold out as well, actually.
No, you got one more.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, we added eight seats.
Eight seats.
So if somebody is available on May 2nd and looks for bourbon and burgers, that one's available. I think the grandstand, the one to really get, Friday night, May 3rd, the first ever beer, bowling, and burger festival.
Where's that being held?
That is at Bullmore in Times Square.
Wow.
24 breweries, three different burgers. I designed the menu. Gourmet pickles from McClure's. There'll be a cheese tasting from Snowfrisk and Jarlsberg and bowling. That's $38 for all you can drink and then eat as well.
Now, I see that the Food Film Festival is part of this.
Yes.
George Motz.
the Motzburger. And so as part of that, Monday night, there is a private party in Brooklyn. I can't announce the location. Where George will be screening an episode of Burgerland from the Travel Channel.
The show is great, by the way.
I'm a big fan. I'm actually on the New York episode, which hasn't aired yet.
Great.
And so I'm giving away tickets to come to this private event where there'll be burgers and beer and hang out with George and watch an episode. So if you go to theburgerweek.com, you can see how to win tickets to that.
Oh, real secret burger, real secret thing. And what type of music is going to get played? I know you already have the Appetite for Destruction, but what's your favorite type of burger?
It's rock music. Burgers are meant to be. You can't listen to pop or maybe some hip hop, but I think, you know, nice 70s, 80s, 90s rock goes best with burgers and beer.
So now that it's barbecue season, I assume that you grill a lot of burgers during this time of year.
It's probably the one item I cook the least at home.
Really?
Yep.
Why is that?
My appreciation for other people's artistry of the burger is larger than it is on my own end. I cook totally different things when I'm at home.
Interesting.
I think it goes back to my mom when I was a kid to reward me for doing good or to get me out of the house away from my stepfather. We would go eat burgers. And so deep, deep, deep in my head, burger going out for burgers is a real special moment.
That is a loaded comment, my man.
Thank you.
Yeah. my friend today was asking me if he was talking about investing in a grill, and he said propane or charcoal, and I was like, charcoal, buddy. Like,
yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. Like, I know that sometimes you're grilling going, but if you're grilling and going, then you're not grilling correctly.
Yeah, well, the other thing, too, is I live in a building where I can't have either of those.
Oh, yeah.
I can only have an electric. And while it works really, really well, it's still not the same, and so I don't want to.
Oh, man, that's even worse than propane.
Yeah. There's some ones out there that work really well. Like, I won't lie to you. I fed people, and they had no idea.
Interesting.
But on the burger front, you can't get an infrared hot enough to cook them the way I want them.
No.
Which is part of the reason I don't cook them.
Right.
Anymore.
Favorite burger in the city? Favorite burger in the country?
It ceased to exist as of December 31st. Rub Barbecue. That is the best burger I've ever
really?
Had.
Really?
Yeah, they closed their doors.
I know they closed their doors, but what made that burger your favorite?
Even though I worked there for a while, I still don't know how they did it. But he basically, Andrew, the owner, would bring in all the meat and then house grind it himself that morning. They made a limited amount so they could control, you know, the quality of the grind. They changed the recipe every week. It was just whatever, however he did it. He was a master scientific burger maker.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Eater did a burger week last week. And yep. They talked about the 12 most elusive burgers in the country and talked, you know, how the burger has become this thing that people want to serve to show off their process, but they don't want to be known as a burger restaurant.
Yep.
And I can see how that can happen. I mean, I can see how a burger can really take over your menu. But by limiting it, making it sort of just part of the lore.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that how Five Napkin happened? They were serving that at Nice Matin, I think. They were serving the Five Napkin burger, and it just became a thing, and suddenly, you know, they have restaurants all over the country.
I mean, empire all over the country.
That's one way to look at it.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to take a quick musical break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about your other event.
Beer Balls.
Beer Balls, which is going to be another fun event. This is an oldie but goodie. You know, on cold and rainy days like this, I just like to listen to, like, old, like, indie rock and that type of stuff. So this is Most Secret Method, Guess the Root.
Do it.
Yes!
Oh, man. I love that song. That is some old, really esoteric indie rock.
Definitely appropriate for the weather. But better than Live Sticks, which is what I would have probably put on. So
yeah, is that your rainy music?
It might have been today.
All right, so let's talk about Beer Balls.
Ah, the second annual.
Second annual Beer Balls. What is it? Where'd you get the name?
We actually tussled with the name for a while, and I didn't want to be super risque about it, but Patrick, who I co and get real with, he was like, no, Beer Balls, we got to go for it. It's too funny. Patrick's kind of a weird left-to-center Irishman, so he usually wins out because I don't like arguing. The idea was to take like a whole bunch of really great craft beer and a whole bunch of like really great chefs who aren't really known for making meatballs,
okay,
and have them make really cool craft meatballs and pair them with beer. And so we did it last year, and I think we sold probably almost 1,000 tickets.
Wow.
It was pretty intense. We boiled it down this year. There's only 300 tickets available. a lot of access to a little bit better food, a little bit better beer, because we didn't have to serve it in such volume. But it's on May 11th at the Alewife in Long Island City. Have you been to the Alewife?
Oh, yeah. I know Alewife.
Awesome beer hall.
Yeah.
Two floors. They just opened a big, huge outdoor patio. 28 lines up for beer. Like, if you're a beer lover and a food lover, it's a great place.
So what can people expect?
Some very strange, non-traditional meatballs. In fact, I think of the 11 balls we're serving, only one of them is like the traditional Italian style. Everything else is like Berkshire pork and weird Mexican recipes and a vegetarian. And it is definitely a food artisan interpretation of a meatball.
You know, I got to say, when it comes to meatball, I'm a traditionalist. I've had the duck meatballs. I've had the goat meatballs and the lamb meatballs, you know, the kofta and stuff like that. But I really just sort of, I just like your classic. I'm a pork, veal, beef, you know, just the thirds.
So we limited the chefs on what meats they could use.
Okay.
To keep it at least somewhere in that range. I think we gave them beef, veal, chicken, and pork, and that was it.
Okay.
So they could choose from that what they wanted, but after that they had it. So there's a barbecue one.
So there's not like a sea urchin fish meatball. Well, I mean, gefilte fish meatball.
No, definitely not. It's more traditional than that, but these are definitely going to be some interesting takes on meatballs. And then, you know, we have 30 different beers on tap. We're going to have a cask ale bar with like 12 different cask ales that were made just for this event. So this is literally the only day they'll be available.
Really?
Yep.
So what are the cask ales going to be?
Dude, I can't speak to that. That is Patrick's side of the business. He has the relationships with the brewers. And there are, like, I show up to our events on the day of and go, all right, what do we have? It's like Christmas morning, you know. And the thing is, with beer balls, it's two sessions. So there's 12 and 4. If you're the beer nerd, you go to the first one because that's the only time you're going to guarantee that all the beers will be available.
Interesting. But if you're the meatball nerd, you can go.
Yeah, either.
Interesting. Are you doing those, like, weird 2-ounce cup things at the events?
Well, we do 4-ounce.
Okay, that's manageable.
Yeah,
the 2-ounce cups just kill me. Just like you take a sip and you go, oh, okay, I sort of tasted that.
Well, the difference about at least the events at the Alewife is we don't install like different taps around the room.
Right.
We just use their bar.
Okay.
So you can just go up to the bar back and forth over and over. You don't have to move around.
Great.
Except for the cask ones, which are upstairs. We've decided.
So just get there early and get a seat at the bar. Just
you can kind of do that.
Yeah, get two glasses, just have them going in rotation.
But that's cool. It's a festival, but it's intimately sized. You know, there's not a lot of waiting in line. There's not a lot of people. There's access to really, you know, great rare product.
And who are some of the chefs?
We have the chef from Little Town. The two guys from the Alewife are there. God, I can't even remember. They all switched last week. We had people come in and come out. Murray Bar on 34, have you heard of this place yet? It's sort of brand new on the scene, but they have this thing called a dirty burger.
Okay.
They're doing the meatball interpretation of it. It's got like cinnamon and honey, and it's got a finishing element in it and a garlic aioli. It's very unique. So they'll be doing the meatball version of that.
Interesting. What do you look for in a meatball? What's your favorite meatball?
God, it either has to be spicy or have a lot of rosemary.
Really? Interesting. I love rosemary and meat, things like that. Especially really fatty meat, you get the like herbaceous notes of the rosemary.
There's a recipe on my burger site called the Whole Lot of Rosemary Meatball.
Okay.
It's supposed to be an AC/DC themed meatball with tons of rosemary in it. I thought that was appropriate for the show.
I think it's appropriate. Now, I know you don't do burgers, but do you cook meatballs?
I am a furious meatball chef.
Recipe.
Furious.
Is it the rosemary one, or do you have...
That's probably... Now, my favorite one, I do a breakfast meatball. That's definitely my favorite. It's got, like, sage sausage, black beans, maple drizzle, eggs, that kind of thing. My rosemary one's good, and then I do a spicy, fatty pork one that's pretty killer as well.
Interesting. All right, now, where did you learn how to make your meatballs? Is this passed down tradition?
Yeah. My mom, who married into the Italian side of my family, learned it from my Italian grandmother. It got passed down to me through that generation. She learned it from her great-grandmother, so...
But it's not like a secret, like, family, I'll kill you if you tell anyone.
I won't tell you the red sauce recipe.
Really?
But I'll tell you any other recipe. Like, everything else, most of them are on the Burger Conquest blog. You just Google meatball Burger Conquest.
What's the, why not the red sauce?
I was just told that belongs to the family. You don't share it.
Huh. Cool. Well, you're welcome for the pizza.
Thanks.
Is it a spicy red sauce?
No, it's very garlicky. It's very garthy, and I've interpreted it a little differently than my mom did, who told me, she showed me how to make it and then wrote it down and it was different than what she showed me. And I said, well, what was the difference? She goes, no, I was just feeling it. I go, well, that's not grandma's sauce. She goes, you do it grandma's way. I said, oh, so it's okay for you, not okay for me. I changed it a little.
Interesting.
Different products were available when they were making that
sauce. No, I know. It changes throughout the ages.
I live in Long Island City. I don't have a garden in the back where I can go pick the tomatoes. So.
No, you don't. But you also can get them canned and shipped in from San Marzano.
I can, but I do have a basil garden. So.
Oh, that's nice.
I'll grow my own basil.
One day. I always think I'm going to do one of those like hanging herb gardens off my fire escape, but then I never get around to it.
Do you have a windowsill?
I do.
That's all you need.
I know.
I have seedlings. You can come over and have some. I have 10 extra seedlings I'm not going to use.
Okay. I'll make some basil. I love fresh basil. Do you grow rosemary?
I did last year. Actually, here's the problem. So if you have too many plants growing together indoors, they don't release the water. There needs to be room for the water to be released off them. And if they're too close, they'll get a fungus because it'll just go from one plant to the other. And once one plant gets it, they all get it. And that happened to me, my rosemary, my sage. I had too many plants last summer, and they literally died in about a day and a half.
What about your parsley?
My what?
Your parsley? Parsley, rosemary.
Yeah.
Anyway, never mind.
So this year I'm doing one thing of basil and one thing of sweet peppers, and that's it.
There you go. All you got to worry about is mites.
Yep.
Right?
And my cat, who likes to eat my...
This is why cats are a problem. You'll never see a dog eating...
A plant.
A plant.
No.
No. He'll pee on it. Yeah. He'll never eat it. Well, Rev, I want to thank you coming on, sharing your two events with us. I will definitely see you during Burger Week and probably for... all your events and things like that.
Let me know. We'll get you some tickets.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk to Amanda from the Smorgasburg Record Fair. I want to play one of my favorite 7-inches that I've ever found at a record fair. It is How Can I Forget, Marvin Gaye.
Oh, awesome.
I've never even seen the song anywhere else. So here we go on Snacky Tunes.
You see, after all the things you've done for me,
to Snacky Tunes. We are just getting Amanda on the phone right now. We are super excited. Smorgasburg, if you haven't been, is one of the greatest things to hit Williamsburg. Every Saturday, they go about, I don't know, 50 vendors open up their stalls, and they sell food, and it's just a real great time for family and friends. Brooklyn Fees, Flea is the vendor, and every year they do a it's founded by Jonathan Butler and Eric Denby, and they have locations all over Brooklyn. And it used to just be sort of pop-up vendors, and they got into food, and now it's food and it's music, so you know that we love it. You know, there's not much that one can say more than how great the summertime is for food and for music. If you've never been in New York during that time, it's really a great era of the year to fall in love with the city, between Central Park shows and picnics and going up to the Cloisters. You know, we do our own barbecue series every year, which we're going to be working with Food Republic and Brooklyn Brewery and Heritage Radio and Eventbrite. We're going to be announcing that next week for one on May 14th. So we're very excited. And we're very excited because this Sunday, we will be swinging by the Brooklyn Flea May 4th to join Manda for the Smorgasburg Record Fair. Manda, thank you and welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
Hey there, thanks for having me. Just to clarify, it's actually Saturday, May 4th.
Oh, did I say Sunday?
So, yeah. So it is inside of the Smorgasburg Festival,
yes.
Not the regular Brooklyn Flea.
Right.
So it'll be inside of all the food vendors.
Right. It's going to be a tight fit. A tight fit for food and for music. How do you plan on keeping all the delicious foods off the records? I guess that's what the plastic sleeves are for, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, we're really lucky right now because we actually, the entire Brooklyn Flea has moved over a block north, and it's inside of the East River State Park now instead of at its prior location right on the water's edge.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot more space. All the food vendors are sort of on one side, and then there's the entire park with the lawn for people to get food and sit and hang out. And we will have a separate area, which will be completely contained for the record vendors.
Now, this is really a great gathering, a real meeting of the minds, a real who's who in the record labels of, you know, New York and beyond. So tell people what they can expect if they've never been.
Well, basically, what we like to do is curate a nice, diverse group of both new record labels and people who collect vinyl, who sell it, stores and private vendors. And in terms of the who's who for new record labels, there is quite an array. I have a full listing online. I mean, there's about 26 labels involved this time total, but just to give you a few hints, there's DFA, there's Domino, True Panther, Warp, What's Your Rupture, Dead Oceans, Jug Jaguar, and Secretly Canadian, their collective labels, Knitting Factory Records, who does a bunch of reissues, Luca Bop is joining the crew this time, Merge from Chapel Hill will be driving up for the day.
Amazing. Amazing. And what do you look for? What do you love so much about the day?
Well, you know, it's really been highlighted to me recently because Record Store Day was only a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have the two of them to compare a little bit closer than usual. And on Record Store Day, you have very limited things. People have to get there very early and wait in line. And there is a fun spirit to it. But I feel like this is the opposite because it's very leisurely and everyone's involved. All the labels are representing themselves and actually selling the records that they've selected to release to the fans of the label, which is something really special to have them involved in the process and not have a record store as the middleman.
Yeah, I mean, it's having been in years past, it's a great day of hanging. You know, you flip some records, you go get a snack, you just sort of chat with some people, and there isn't that pressure of, I got to get there at 9 in the morning before it opens. It really, you know, like Record Store Day, I think this record fair really captures on what people love about browsing for records and talking about music and being around people who love music, and also getting to meet the people who run these fantastic labels.
Absolutely. It's almost like summer camp for record collectors.
It is. It is. And it's a real, you know, nothing is better than just sort of in the summer, like cranking out the record player, drinking some beers. It's and this is a really great way to start, you know, with some fresh tunes for the summer.
Absolutely.
What's your favorite sort of like food and record combination? What do you usually rock on the turntable and in the kitchen at the same time?
Oh, well, I have to say I'm a big brunch cooker. I can't do much, right, but I can do a pretty good brunch. And I also like some rock steady to go with it. Recently, this Listen to the Music comp that came out about a year ago, that's been a really nice pairing for me while cooking eggs and grits and bacon.
Oh, that sounds really good. You know, I've found that there's few things I like more than, especially during this time of year, is like opening up all the windows, putting on a record player, and cooking. The only issue is when you have to flip sides. If you're doing something like baking or something like that, you may need a helper.
It's going to be hot.
It's going to be hot, and you might need someone to help, you know, flip the record while your hands are sticky. So what are all the details? When does it start? Is it free to get in? What's the deal?
Okay, all the main information. So it's Saturday, May 4th.
Yes.
It starts at 11 in the morning, and it will go till 6. It kind of trickles at the beginning and the end.
Mm-hmm.
There's like sort of a natural process to it. It's absolutely free to get in. It will
cool.
be right to the right of where Smorgasburg is, inside of the state park, under one giant tent.
What are the cross streets?
It's right at the edge of the water at Kent Street, and
great.
It's at where North 7th dead ends into
cool.
the park.
Cool.
And they'll be, on top of having all these great vendors all day, there will also be DJs at Red Bull Music Academy selected with us.
Awesome.
We work together to pick a really great collection of DJs for the day, which include Dan Seltzer, who runs Acute Records, DJ Rupture, Veronica Vasisky from Minimal Wave, Dean Bain, who runs True Panther, James Friedman, who curates Throne of Blood record label, and James Pants.
Man, love all of those.
There might be a couple more surprise DJs last minute. We'll
secret
see.
Surprises. I mean, there's going to be a lot of DJs in town the next week for the Red Bull Music Academy.
I mean, there's mania right now with the Red Bull Music Academy. Every night there's something so impressive going on in the city. So we're really thrilled to be a part of it. And also, of course, Dogfish Head Beer is our sponsor. And so we'll have four different brews on tap, I believe.
Oh, my gosh. I love Dogfish Head.
Oh, yeah. It's delicious.
They have a Saison beer that is just, it's, ugh, I dream of it. It haunts me.
I think this time they're going to be, they'll have this one, Positive Contact, on site, which is delicious.
Ooh.
I got to have some samples of it in the wintertime.
It's very
light. It's a bit of like a lemongrass undertone. It's delicious.
Awesome. Well, that's going to be the perfect imbibement to go along with record listening. Well, Amanda,
yeah.
I want to thank you for coming back on the show. It really is a great day.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I can only say that even if you only have half an hour to swing in and pick up one record, it's totally worth kid-friendly, dog-friendly.
Actually, dogs can't come to the location. I know. Devastating.
Not
but
dog friendly.
Kid friendly.
Bring your kids.
Foodie friendly.
Leave the dog at home.
Vinyl lover friendly.
Yes, vinyl lover friendly. And there's always, if you think that your record collection is too big, you will be sadly mistaken when you come out with 10 new records on Saturday.
Absolutely.
Amanda, thank you so much. I will see you on Saturday. We'll have our parents in tow. My dad can talk about all the records that he got when he was a kid and that
Perfect.
I wound up stealing. So
wonderful. I look forward to hearing.
And what's the website for
right.
the website Thanks. One more time?
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. It's brooklynflea.com. Well, I want to thank all of our guests today for our summer springtime preview. We'll be back next week with a whole new show. Super excited. And here's one last track. I am just scrolling through because I want to play a good one. But yeah. We'll do this one, Toast, Arches of Loaf, one of my favorite bands from my record collecting days. You'll sing Snacky Tunes. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.